Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. A recent survey on civility in America finds that 65% of respondents say lack of civility in this country is a major problem. The other 35% told the pollster to shove it. Those polls also, I made that part up, those polls also said that people encounter incivility. However, they define it 2 to 3 times a day. Could it be that more Americans are in line with Sartre, who said hell is other people, one of the great quotes of all time, than Tolstoy, who said the sole meaning of life is to serve humanity? Here with us in Studio 3 for her take on our apparent civility deficit is Nancy Kane. Nancy's an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robison Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book, Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Hello there, Nancy.
Hey there. So where are we, Nancy? With Sartre or with Tolstoy?
Well, I'm with Jane Austen, as you've heard me say before. So she wrote a lot about civility. She mentions it like 50-plus times in Sense and Sensibility. I looked this up on the internet. You can Google Jane Austen and civility, dear reader. And, you know, she – it's very interesting. In her early books, particularly in Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice, the definition of civility is broader, and this is true – etymologically, right, from the 18th century to our own time, broader, and it encompasses, and this is important, I think, to think about, it encompasses the idea that civility is about our responsibilities in society, and that it comes actually from a word which means community and civic mm-hmm. virtue in some sense. It goes all the way back to the French and the Latin. And so, you know, in Jane Austen, the idea of civility is not just about good manners, right? Not just about the opposite of that, as Sartre's talking about, you know, hell is other people. It's also about are we prepared to comport ourselves, right, with the responsibility that goes with interacting with other people in, you know, a democratic, a civic, a market society. I think that's a very interesting aspect of this. You know, if you go back to the more modern, if you go to the more modern version, which is that civility has come to mean good manners, right, working and playing nicely with others. My own sense in public life is that we continue to snowball down the steep slope of rudeness and road rage and all the vitriol that one sees on or hears on talk radio, not on our show, but not on your show.
Of course not. Of course not.
Our show. Go ahead. Yeah.
Excuse me. Yes, that's
it is
correct.
Our show. You're included.
I feel such a part of it. But, you know, but certainly if you listen to lots of talk radio, or if you just read the comment section on publication's internet
page. How about Marjorie's columns at the Herald? There's no more fun than reading those.
Hold on. Let me just insert something really quickly about that. I worked at the Boston Herald for years, kind of a rough and tumble place, a tabloid. Now I am the spirituality columnist at the Boston Globe for their website, Crux Now. You should all read it, C-R-U-X cruxnow.com. Give it a free plug. On a Catholic spirituality site, the viciousness, it is unbelievable, of some people who are like furious about any mention, for example, of women doing anything, you know, getting up off the floor in the Catholic Church. I mean, it's just unbelievable on that site. But go ahead.
So people like to think, I assume, that their time, whatever it is the most this, the most that, the most whatever. Most of us think, when you look at Washington, we spoke to John King earlier today, Jim McGovern, the congressman, this is the least civil people have ever been, both professionally and personally, because all they do, they don't even look or listen to people. All they do is text them or tweet them or something. Are we at an epic level of incivility, or is it just because we're consumed by our own time?
You know, I think probably we're at new lows. We can champion that, you know, if you will, dubious distinction. Just on Washington, I was reminded in this article, dear reader, from The New Yorker, The Civility Wars, published December 1st by HUA, Huao Su, HSU. And he points out that, you know, during Obama's, I believe, 2009 State of the Union address, a congressman, Joe Wilson, screamed out, "You lie." Now, So I think I don't see any change in the slope of the curve. We seem to be sliding down. I think the internet enables it because it allows you in real time to publish something, to react, to respond. Email does the same thing.
Anonymity, by the way, also on the internet.
Absolutely.
And
it emboldens
comment
us.
Pages
it emboldens,
really emboldens
us. Yeah. But here's what strikes me thinking about this. And I risk sounding like a little old lady, although that's not the wardrobe I have, dear listeners.
Do you not? That is so true.
But I think that the older definition about are we prepared to own the responsibility of civic, democratic, market, communal, even urban life, because there's lots of connotations of urbanity attached to older definitions of civility. That's related to manners. And I don't mean manners in the Emily Post. Do we have the right number of forks, and are we using them in the right order on the left side of the plate in this Merchant Ivory film? I don't mean that at all. I mean, do we know how to interact with people in a productive way that, in some sense, offers our respect for each other? That's important, whether we're talking about Congress trying to do something, right, or whether we're talking about trying to respond to an op-ed piece.
Or cutting someone off on the highway for a parking spot.
On the highway.
Yeah, people are really vicious about that. You know, I have a theory which may be ridiculous, but
I have one after you.
I do remember in the olden days when I was back in school, in grammar school, we had something called civics. Yeah. And civics was not just about, you know, patriotism and, you know, American history and all that kind of stuff. It was about that communitarian thing where you have an obligation to your neighbor, to your street, to your town. You were supposed to volunteer at the clean up the park days, and you were supposed to shovel snow for the old lady that lived next door, all that kind of stuff. And that's gone by the boards. And I wonder if that matters at all.
Well, yeah, sure it matters, right? Sure it matters.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's another interesting article that again, your superstar producer, Chelsea Mertz sent along, dear reader, December 6, 2014, from the New York Times, David Siegel, the haggler, writing about a gentleman who went to help a woman at a Shell mini mart, right? She went into, bought antifreeze, it was a cold day. She said to the clerk as she's checking out, I don't know if she'd bought gas or not, can you put the antifreeze in my car? I don't know how to do it. The clerk said, I can't. The gentleman was right behind her. I don't know if he was paying for gas or what he was doing. He said, I'll help you, right? He tried to help her, and I guess they eventually got the antifreeze in the car. Meanwhile, he got fined a parking ticket for helping her, and I guess whoever the parking company was, it's a nasty company. Let me make sure I find out who it is so we can all, right, note this duly in a gracious and civil way. Platinum Parking Company fined him, and now they've doubled the fine because he didn't pay it, and he's asked the New York Times ombudsman, the haggler, to try and sort this out.
Let me just say.
There's a great example of we actually do want that woman to get her antifreeze in the car for all kinds of reasons. We can even make an Adam Smith kind of self-interested argument that it's good for me if she has antifreeze in her car. And the fact that he's trying to do something with decency and some kind of communitarian spirit, and then is penalized and takes 2 years to kind of iron this out, and eventually has to eat the money and pay it because the black.
Can I tell you something, Nancy? We're all frauds. I don't care what this poll says. If we wanted civility, there would be civility. I don't buy the story. You just had your little story. I've told Marjorie this story about 6 or 7 years ago when the TSA people essentially were groping everybody who came through onto an airplane. You remember the story. I'm taking a shuttle to New York City.
I told you
about this.
Yep.
Two young blonde women basically being fondled by the TSA people. I, in a rare moment of whatever the word is,
chivalry. Sir Galahad at Logan Airport.
I go up to try to intervene, and you know who tells me to back off? The two women tell me to back off, not the TSA person.
Excuse me.
What's that?
Please. I mean, that is very nice
that
you did that, Jim. But let's be honest here, as long as we're being honest. You were the person that if someone looked at you sideways on 93,
I agree.
Chased them to Ohio to seek revenge.
See, but my point is this. Generally, we get what we want. You know, for example, when they're horrible television shows, the answer is, why are they giving us horrible television? Because we watch horrible television. Why are they this? If the 65% who say they think or whatever that poll was I read, that this society doesn't have enough civility, want more civility. If that's what we wanted, we'd get it from our neighbors and our leaders. I think we like the way things are. You don't think so?
No, I don't think so either.
I think the centrifugal forces of our moment, if you will, right, the zeitgeist, right, want to push us into rudeness, want to wall us up in our little, if we're really excited about online communities. It's interesting because people like to talk a lot about community on the internet, but actually there's a lot of good evidence that the more time you spend on the internet, the less able you are to just navigate very simple interpersonal transactions, including commercial transactions. So I think that we have lost the grounding in how to do this at some level. That's a combination of a number of different things. But I think when we actually experience it, the Starbucks barista who says, how about an extra shot because you waited so long? Or
exactly.
or there's a great example in this in another article that Chelsea sent us about a man who's by the side of the road and someone stops to help him change his flat tire. And he says, you know, you don't have time to do this. And he says, I do. And he does. And he pats him on the shoulder afterwards and says, I know you would have done the same thing. And the guy is filled, right? It's the holiday season, dear listeners, is filled with, you know, goodwill toward other people. And I think we know it when we experience it and we're better for it and we're glad of it. And yet, as you just said, Jim, it's in very short supply. Maybe we actually don't know what we really want. Or we're misled at some level by what the really good stuff. We know the good stuff when we experience it, but we're not always able to show up and offer it, right, or ask for it.
I want to ask you a question, though, Nancy Kane, because I read that story about the person showing up all covered in grease to change the tire, the person at the side of the road with his elderly mother or whatever that was there. And I thought, put yourself in that situation. You've got a flat tire. You're at the side of the road. It's kind of a rural road, and it's nighttime. Suppose somebody showed up, an all greasy guy, like 6 feet two, to change your flat tire. I'd be afraid of him.
You absolutely. But the person who wrote it, I found it, dear listeners, is a professor named Andrew Reiner, like Rob Reiner, R-E-I-N-E-R. New York Times Magazine, I believe, teaching civility to daring assignments Halloween this year. So really interesting article by a professor trying to teach us and who experiences. But he, right, wasn't scared because he was a man.
Right.
But if a woman had showed up, right, who said, you know,
that'd be different.
My dad taught me how, or
that'd
I learned how, or I love changing flat tires. Let me help you, sister.
Yep.
Girl, you go, girl. You would have jumped at the chance.
That's right.
And you would never have forgotten it, and you'd be talking about it on the air right now.
Oh, yes.
So again, we know the good stuff when we experience it. P.S., it's not just when we get the good stuff, the extra shot or the flat tire helped or someone holding the door open. I travel for business all the time. Because I'm a historian, my carry-on is always full of books. So I actually am traveling from the 19th century with a steamer trunk in 21st century conveyance, right? So I'm always struggling. I'm not weak, but I'm always struggling to get my bag up. Let me tell you, there isn't a man that I've, in the last 3 years, that has helped me, no matter how.
You're kidding.
No matter how anxious and, you know, exhausted and teetery I look. And yet, when I've had flight attendants help me, female flight attendants, and when they do, you feel great. So we you know, whether we get it or not, when we actually offer it to someone, so I'm the first person to jump up when someone is struggling with a piece of luggage, usually
good
a woman.
For you.
First person to jump up. And man, she smiles at you or he smiles at you if it's an older gentleman, and you feel good because there was just a moment of human connection. This is what civility means when the old version meets the new version that we're now ranking and rating as so low in terms of where we are in society today.
You know, so we start a couple of minutes ago, assuming you're both right, and for argument's sake, I'll say that you are right, that people do want it. Identifying the causes is of why we're uncivil is probably useful because then you theoretically attack the causes. One thing was the internet and the impersonal nature of it. You don't look people in the face. You don't really listen because you're all absorbed in your own thing. I assume the second thing is people are scared when the economy is a mess and it's not quite as much of a mess as it was a handful of years ago. You get fearful and you tend to be less interested in the issues that mattered other people, right? I mean, you're really more absorbed by your own stuff, which I totally understand. Yep. So are those the primary reasons we're in this mess, economic fear and internet obsession?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think both of those are really important. Andrew Reiner, this professor who teaches a class on, it's called something like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
How to find community in the internet age, had one of his students in a moment of uncharacteristic candor say before a group of other students and himself say, well, actually, I'm kind of afraid to interact, right, in an eye-to-eye kind of, you know, kind of well-mannered way because I may be perceived as uncool. And so I think there's a fear that's also just about basic blocking, social blocking and tackling, so to speak. I think people like Joe Wilson and lots of different kinds of figures that we look to as figures with authority don't know how to do this very well. So when they right, are, if you will, not playing nicely, not listening well. We've forgotten how to listen.
And no, that, listen is
that
a huge
affects
part
everything,
of it. I
right? I think when people of authority aren't comporting themselves with even just a semblance of respect for other people, it becomes easier to say, well, they don't do it. I don't have to do it.
I think that's huge.
But I think the biggest thing, so forgive me again one more time. I seem to sound more like David Brooks with every passing day, and that is not my life's mission.
David Brooks,
as much as I respect him.
He has some good days.
He's a very integrated
thinker.
Can I interrupt?
Speaking of civility, Marjorie, you probably don't remember. Do you know where, and it relates to civility, do you know where we met David Brooks?
I think it was the 2008 Democratic Convention.
In?
He's very short.
In,
Denver.
Right, in Denver. Yeah. We met him there. And mm-hmm. why am I bringing that up in the context of civility? I had a small problem with my back at that point. Mm-hmm. So a very civil person, a woman actually, carried my bags at the airport. Do you know who it was? Marjorie was the one who was carrying my bags. It's totally true.
Well,
we're traipsing through the airport. Everybody
is
looking
unusual,
at this 6'5" man who was carrying nothing, and this woman who had two of her own bags and two of mine. It was very civil of you, Marjorie. Thank you.
Thank you.
So,
you're welcome. Did he say anything about this?
No, we talked. We just said hello. We both said we were admirers, and he was totally nerdy and totally on it. You want him to be. I don't mean huge physically. You want him to be this dynamic, huge presence, and he was a little nerdy character. It was just very disappointing. Sorry.
Jim was rude to him.
You know, I think this is about is back to, you know, Edmund Hillary, the mountaineer, the British mountaineer who climbed Everest and most likely died on Everest. Who said, you know, we do not conquer the mountain, we master ourselves. I think a lot of this is at some very, I'm not saying this in an old world way. I'm saying it in a very modern, almost, if you will, Buddhist way, that we have to, in some sense, get right with ourselves well enough to say, I'm actually not going to scream at this person, even though I'm really frustrated. Or I've made a pact with myself a couple years ago that I was going to stop trying to razz people off at stoplights or play the road rage game in Massachusetts. I've learned to drive here, been driving here for years. I just decided I'm just going to cultivate a more zen-like kind of way towards driving and keep calm and carry on is my mantra. And it's actually very, very difficult at times because people cut you off. They do incredibly rude things. And all you want to do is just like, you know, either gun it or honk or something. And I think, and I would give myself very mixed marks on being able to do this consistently, but it is still about, in some small ways, interaction by interaction, mastering myself well enough to not do something stupid because I reacted really quickly that would be rude and uncivil and could be dangerous.
I've adopted that Zen approach to driving too, Marjorie. I think.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, there's a couple of other things that I think play into this, and I'd like your reaction, Nancy Cannon from Harvard Business School. There was a book, I don't know, 10 years ago, Reviving Ophelia by a woman named Mary Pfeiffer. It was about teenage girls and their problems. But one of the things that she said, I think it was in this book, it may have been in a different one, but anyway, her point was that we know more about Oprah Winfrey and Brad Pitt than we do about our neighbors now. Mm-hmm. We've lost touch totally with our neighbors. And I think that plays into this whole civility thing in our own neighborhoods. And just this week, it was announced that Girl Scout cookies are not going to be sold
door-to-door
anymore.
Oh, my
goodness. They're not going to – I know there's an internet.
That may be the most important.
They're expanding.
They're expanding. Right. They're going to sell them
not
online.
Not only in person.
Some can still sell them door-to-door, or their mothers can take them to the office, which is what usually happens, and sell them there.
Talk about uncivil, by the way.
But the Girl Scout thing going door-to-door has stopped again because – people are afraid of their neighbors attacking their Girl Scout cookie seller daughter, so they're going to sell them online. So that's part of this whole thing,
too. It is part of it.
We look at our neighbors as possible attackers as opposed to helpers.
Well, remember we used this – we talked about this – I think it's a Warren Zevon song. One of our listeners later corrected me when I attributed it to Pete Splendid Isolation. There is a strange way in which we do retreat into or default into splendid isolation. But again, I just go back to what I said before. I think when we reach out to people, when we, you know, serendipitously experience, you know, connect with a neighbor. Oh, you live down the street. Oh, ta 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 ta. Oh,
great.
I walk my
dogs
in that park too. It's great.
It is great.
So, you know, we may be our own, we may be getting in our own way and be our own small but still consistent worst enemy on this stuff. And the only way to try to test this is to actually just take a tentative step or two towards some kind of civil gesture. And that's part of what Andrew Reiner, this professor at Townsend University in Maryland, does, makes his class do. And there's, again, with mixed results, and to your point, Jim, great trepidation. But if we go back to kind of the economic argument for civility or the political argument for civility. It is, you know, it's unequivocal. It's just ultimately very demonstrable that highly functioning teams, groups, institutions, you know, drive on a gas tank of respect, listening, collaboration, which requires, you know, respect.
What's
and
the
listening.
Most popular cable television news shows, Nancy Kane? The shows that are arguably the least civil, most confrontational, show the least amount of listening between hosts, guests, and the most amount of screaming. Again, I hope you are both right. I think the independent evidence, I know we say it, and I think we mean it. We mean the words when we say them, but then we still are drawn to conflict. I mean, it just, I mean, I happen to think, I know a lot of our audience doesn't think this, what's his face, the number one rated television show.
Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly, who yeah. I think is a really talented character,
no
a
question.
Lot of people.
No question.
His whole existence is about confrontation and incivility.
I mean, right, so, yeah, but then, Rush Limbaugh right, as well. The
well, I mean,
one.
Go to number one radio show yep, in America.
Yep. Well, all right, but that's Exhibit A. But Exhibit B on the other side of the courtroom is Oprah Winfrey, who is not about anything but civil behavior. Sorry. Yeah, she can, like, tell you good stories about the wisdom that Anastasia, her esthetician, the eyebrow waxer, dispenses. But, man, she does it with grace and aplomb and
respect.
How many
people are watching the Oprah Network?
Not as many as used to, but she's still a megastar.
Yeah, but you know she doesn't move her pinky. That's millions
no,
and millions
right.
of women around the world
right,
don't
right.
watch her. And part of the reason they watch her is because she represents something full stop, right? The whole package that women respect. And P.S., she's done a very, very good job of walking the talk. We don't
yeah,
have, like, a lot of Oprah scandals because I think Oprah is, and I've met her once, I think she is who she says she is, who she appears to be. And a lot of that is about respect, regardless of zip code, regardless of which fork you use, regardless of where you went to school, right? Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, Aretha had it right, and listening. Paul Tillich, the 20th century theologian who I know Marjorie knows well, said, you know, the first duty of love is to listen. Our first duty as, you know, kind of card-carrying members of the human interactive race is to listen. To
okay, we
other.
Only have a minute left, and here is a quiz for
okay,
both
I'm
of you.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox now.
In
thank
light
you.
Of the fact, this is my final piece of evidence, and then I will rest my case. And again, I hope I lose this case, but I think I won't. Do either of you know what the Civil Society Institute is? Either of
yeah,
you?
It was some. It yeah. was. It's the thing.
No,
this
it's
guy
not.
Started
it's, no, it's something else. No, this is what this thing is. I may get the name wrong. It's in Newton. Do you know where? Does that ring a bell?
No.
In 1996, I remember this like it was yesterday. I looked it up this morning. An organization was founded by a wealthy donor, a woman by the name of Pam Solo, who I haven't heard of since, was given a $35 million grant. This is about a mile and a half from us to start the Civil Society Institute, the Institute on Civility, some such thing. Why don't both of you take all the time you want to describe the work of this organization in the last 18 years that exists a mile and a half from our studio? Go ahead.
Maybe she absconded with the $35 million.
And Catherine, our coworker, went online this morning to make sure it still exists so it isn't like it disappeared.
Oh, it does exist.
18
okay.
years of work on civility, and the three of us have never heard of this.
Maybe
opera.
She
what
needs
does
a
that
PR
say?
Person.
But I think
I'm sorry
need,
to be so negative.
Right, my last comment, and
okay.
I recognize that I'm swimming upstream here.
No, you're not. Marjorie's
not
totally
me,
with you.
I think that we need to get away from thinking of civility as some kind of elitist hierarchical focus on manners and just start thinking about what our mamas, almost all of our mamas, said when we were young about saying please and thank you and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, whether we need ma'am or not, yes and no, and listening and responding in a way that we'd like to be treated vis-a-vis others, including strangers and neighbors, many of whom are strangers to us, and then just test that. Test it. And I think we can go right back to our mothers, 95% of our mothers, and just think about what's the real ballast, what's the real I-beam here. And sometimes societies go off their rails and then come back.
Nancy, get out of here. We really have... We have stuff to do. I can't just listen to this anymore.
You know, we are getting out of here, but we have to go with this note. A lot of us, you know, the models from our mothers, as Nancy said, was if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Alice
what is
Longworth,
your motto?
Alice Longworth Roosevelt. Yes,
that's
her
not,
line.
No, that's not
if
her
you don't
line.
Think anything good to say about anybody, come sit right next to me.
Exactly. That's
one of the great lines of all time. That's
Nancy
my
Kane.
Favorite.
Nancy Kane joins
Nancy.
Us
it's
every Tuesday for open mic. She's a historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Nancy's right. I'm right. Jim's wrong. Okay. Up next, we're going to ask you how you feel about civility. Is it just, are we the most uncivil we've ever been? If so, are you a part of the problem? Do you want to change things? We're going to take your calls and emails. 877-301-8970 is the number. 877-301-8970 or bpr@wgbh.org.